This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and it's a pleasure to have you on our radio Main Street all across North Dakota this time of day, the day before the 4th of July. North Dakota's biggest summer tourist attraction is preparing for a big holiday weekend. Medora, the restored frontier village on the edge of Theodore Roosevelt National Park, has leveraged the rugged landscape and its most famous former resident as an entertainment destination for many years. Recently, I sat down with the man in charge, Randy Hatzenbuehler, president of the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation, to talk about Medora's past and its future.
This is my 31st year working in Medora, and my background is I was a CPA, and I was changing careers, and someone was in our office and said, you should come up and visit. And it was this brand new Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation that Harold Schaefer had created, and I like to say I must have been living under a rock because I did not know who Harold Schaefer was. And I grew up in Mandan, North Dakota, but I had the good pleasure of visiting with Rod Jayden, who was the first executive director president of the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation, and worked with Rod for about 9 years before he passed away, and he became my closest friend, and learned a lot being able to work with Rod and be around Harold Schaefer, just a couple of unbelievable people who you could – sometimes you can overstate things, but you can really make a case that they gave their lives to benefit Medora. So much of their energy and their effort was to build this little community as an attraction and for our state. So that's been my history. My wife reminds me that when I did it, I said I'd make a 3-year commitment to them. And then we were going to build a theater, and then that was going to be 3 more years. And then there was the next thing. And after maybe 12 or 15, she said, "You're going to die in Medora, aren't you?" And I don't want to have that happen, but I sure want to keep working and living in Medora.
Well, you see Rod's name and Harold Schaefer's obviously all around Medora. Tell us about Harold.
I consider having known and gotten to, I say work with Harold, but he never worked because he had given everything away at that point, and all he did was volunteer. He was never an employee of the Medora Foundation. He was the founder of it. But I think it was one of the great privileges of my life. There have been a handful of people that kind of fit this description, but Harold really was the epitome of, in 13 years of being around Harold, I was always encouraged. He just didn't ever say anything that discouraged you. You always felt like you wanted to do more, and that, I don't know what it was about him, but you were the only person in the room when you were with him. And he seemed to have that effect on everybody. He had an immense pride for North Dakota. That came through all the time. I think even this year's show, I smile and I think, man, I think Harold would love the way we tell the local history in our show this year. And his idea that Medora should be a place where people build their pride for North Dakota, build pride for their country. Some people... I've experienced this that when visitors, and we've had over 4 million visitors see our show now, and it's so much fun to meet people from all over the country. Once in a while, people will say, "You could never get away with this on the East Coast or the West Coast." And I say, "What do you mean?" "Well, it's so patriotic." But we don't think anything of it. It's just kind of part of our fabric. I think that all came from Harold Schaefer. It was who he was, and it's what he wanted our state to portray, and he wanted Medora to kind of be a flag for all of that. He was an amazing guy.
Well, Harold Schaefer was the dad of Ed Schaefer, who became governor and secretary of agriculture and is still involved with the foundation, isn't he?
We're very lucky. Ed Schaefer has continued that Schaefer legacy. He's the chairman of our board. He's very active. He's been involved now for quite a long time. And Ed, I think, has got to be given a lot of credit for taking the Medora Foundation to another level. I think it's in 31 years, you kind of learn some things just by looking backwards. We are a classic organization. We were a founder organization when Harold created it. And we operated as a founder organization, just as you should when you're new. But as you grow and you evolve over time, you also need to recognize that things change. And I think Ed has really helped guide us into being an even better organization. I would say you can't talk about Medora without even mentioning Shyla. And when you're mentioning Harold and Ed, I think about that when people like Harold and Shyla have passed on, we were just doing orientation these last few days, and I shared this with some of the 300 employees. Shyla Schaefer passed away 3 years ago on March, 12 hours after my mother passed away. It was a very emotional, intense time. And one of our really outstanding employees, a lady named Jocelyn Reichert, now Jocelyn Tooze, we were at Shyla's funeral, and she was emotional, and she said, "What are we going to do? What will Medora be like without Shyla?" She had not worked with Harold previously. And when you came into this building, our Life Skills Center, which is the administrative building for the Medora Foundation, you saw a rock. If you didn't notice it, it said, "Hello, you nice people." Yes. Shyla Schaefer. And what I said to Jocelyn, you're right. Nobody will ever replace Shyla Schaefer. But collectively, we have to be better. Collectively, the best way we can honor Harold Schaefer, Shyla Schaefer, the whole Schaefer family, and not just the Schaefer family. There are over, I think, 6,000 people who have supported the Medora Foundation in our history. To honor those people who love Medora, who love North Dakota, and think what we do is valuable, we have to be better than Shyla was. But we can't do it by ourselves. Collectively, every kid who's from 22 different countries and 25 different states, if we can educate them about this spirit of hospitality that was Harold and Shyla, and if we greet every person who comes to town with the attitude of, "Hello, you nice person," then we will do it. And I'll feel really, really good about the people who work for us and who are saying, "Harold and Shyla's lives will matter forever."
Well, I was one of those lucky people who got to see them sitting out on the porch, as they were always right in the middle of the action, in the middle of Medora, saying hello to every guest who came into town. And I had an opportunity to talk to Shyla a couple of times, because she was a performer in the Twin Cities before she and Harold got married, and she brought that entertainment ability to the musical.
Oh, her energy. If there's one thing that the cast misses, it would be Shyla sitting in the audience. Because I've never been on a stage as a performer, but I think after watching almost 2,600 shows in the last 31 years, I do understand energy. And they feed off of energy. And probably no one I've ever known projected more toward the cast than Shyla. You know, it could be a small crowd, and they were going to perform because Shyla was beaming and smiling. And yeah, Medora is just, I think it's a reflection of those people. And it's interesting, you know, Harold Schaefer and his family created this organization. And there was a good case, I believe. I wasn't there at that moment. I came about a year later, that some folks thought that maybe it should have been the Schaefer Foundation or the Schaefer Medora Foundation or the Harold Schaefer Foundation. It might have been a singular vote, and I'm kind of fond of saying Harold was the smartest guy in the room, because he probably unilaterally said it's going to be the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation, because he understood that Roosevelt gave this area relevance forever. And he was insistent on it. He did not want it to be about him. He wanted it to be about the landscape, the local history, and Theodore Roosevelt. To that point, this spring, our Theodore Roosevelt, Joe Wiegand, and I traveled around North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. And I was sharing this, that in 1958, a small group of people, you could say, had a dream. They wanted to remember Theodore Roosevelt's life in North Dakota on the 100th anniversary of his birth year in 1958. That small group of people, most of whom are just names on paper to me. Jim Barnhart is a name. I don't know who he was. Father Cassidy is a name. I don't know who he was. I never met him. A lot of the boys from Home on the Range for Boys, were people, I don't know who they were. I did meet Hollis Dietz, but he was one of those people. That group of people had shovels in hand and buckets of gravel, and they carved out an amphitheater in the side of a Badlands Butte and put on a show called Old Four Eyes in 1958. Dr. Frederick Walsh from North Dakota State University, I think, was the director and writer probably. And they did that. Now, I've gotten the pleasure of working here for 31 years, and there are times when you reflect and you say, what if that group of people did not have that idea? Would Harold Schaefer have fallen in love in the way that he did to invest his personal money, his time, his energy, his just the force that he was? I think you could make an argument maybe it wouldn't have happened. If he didn't and Gold Seal Company hadn't started those things, would there have ever been a Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation? And if there was no Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation, there are people who have done significant things for this community with no return for themselves personally. They're doing it because they're investing in what they believe is something really good for the state of North Dakota. And today, you can now ask yourself that question of if that small group of people in 1958 who wanted to remember Theodore Roosevelt on the 100th birth year, now the 100th year of TR passing, we're talking about a presidential library in western North Dakota in the Badlands, right here in Medora. I know that there are going to be people who are going to do incredible things to make that happen, but we can't forget people who had shovels and buckets of gravel who had this, what I think, germinated into something unbelievable. It will surpass, and I think that's what Harold would be smiling about, even surpass his imagination for what Medora could have been.
You mentioned Gold Seal Corporation, which the products, Glass Wax and Mr. Bubble, that made this entrepreneur very successful, Harold Schaefer. And he starts this town, it becomes an attraction. And now you mention the next piece here, because Theodore Roosevelt spent maybe a couple of years in North Dakota, but he called them formative years. And now the state is about to really put an important new structure on the map. What does that library mean to Medora?
I think it's what it means to the state. Clearly to Medora and western North Dakota, it will have tremendous impact. We're very proud of what Medora is. But I think we become nationally aware. There's an awareness of Roosevelt in this space that I think that there's going to be people from all over the country and world who are going to discover North Dakota, because there are a lot of people who like presidential history. And when you study presidents, Roosevelt almost always comes up in the top five. He's one of the four on Mount Rushmore. So there was extraordinary things that he was doing to ascend to that level of appreciation. So you take that reality and say, most people go, you mean there's not one already? The opportunity for people to discover the landscape, and I think that's a very, very important part of this notion of a presidential library, is that it's the landscape that affected him. I think that's part of the library, is that people will come and experience a landscape. It's not the only landscape that we encounter in our lives that has a really good effect on us. But this is the landscape that had the impact on Roosevelt. We'll be able to share that. You know, there are notions about Roosevelt's life of dare greatly, think boldly, live passionately. Lots of those things were influenced by being here in the area of Medora and the Badlands. And I think that presidential library will communicate those things. It's really, we're at the starting line of figuring out what it's going to be, but it's a really good starting line when you have such great financial backing. I call them tailwinds. There's still a lot, I think, that the Presidential Library Foundation, which is a completely separate organization, will accomplish. I'm really proud of our organization, the Medora Foundation, and our board for saying we're going to do everything we can to help that organization and that project to be a full success for the state.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about the library, because presidential libraries aren't necessarily books upon books. They're a way to present history in context. Theodore Roosevelt may not have been in a war during his presidency, but he got the Panama Canal finished. Before that presidency, he was famously a Rough Rider organizer in the Spanish-American War. And in the First World War, he wanted to form a regiment to go to France. Do you have any involvement in the planning for the library, for the programming of the library? Or if you did, what would you suggest?
Well, no official role, but I think that the Library Foundation has rightly invited lots of people to be part of the visioning. I think that what I just said, and I think there are a lot of people who are of the same mind, that the library will be a new kind of library. I think it wants to be experiential. I believe that I've heard some people describe it this way, that the fourth wall has to be removed. And whatever happens in the space is very important and educational and inspirational. But it also should be a large invitation to go out the back door and get into the Badlands so that you can experience what Roosevelt experienced. So I'm eager to learn what they're going to come up with and how. But that would be one of my real encouragements, is to say, make sure that the landscape is part of the museum library, because, you know, you started to mention Panama Canal, the police commissioners, Assistant Secretary of Navy, governor, president, lots of things, Congressional Medal of Honor, Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Well, let's talk about the foundation again, because you're the president, and it's a nonprofit. You're a CPA. So what's the business plan here? How much of this is income from people who visit? How much of it is fundraising? How much of it is endowment? How does it work?
It's a great question. We are a 501c3 nonprofit public foundation with related purpose activities. The primary reason that we exist that way is the Medora musical. There are unrelated business activities like lodging. Those are just like any other for-profit entity. We hope someday to make a profit. We haven't achieved that yet. I shouldn't say that. We actually did when the oil industry was booming and we had 150 rooms rented throughout the winter, we actually got into the black. We are fortunate to have the setup. The model, you know, when you talk about a model, when the Schaefer family was exploring how to make sure that Medora continued in the future, when they were selling their company, as I've read through that history and understood from conversations with others, there was a real likelihood that Medora would dry up and die because the company that purchased them didn't have any interest in the Badlands and in the history of Medora. Harold Schaefer had acquaintance with Lawrence Rockefeller and the Rockefeller family, and if you have ever been to Colonial Williamsburg, you know that the Rockefellers were largely responsible for preserving and restoring that historic community. So the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation, while it's not nearly like Williamsburg, we do have vehicles in town and we have a mix of history and modern day presentations. Our model was Colonial Williamsburg. Williamsburg also has hotels and has golf courses, but those are outside the boundaries of the hedges that define Colonial Williamsburg. So our model is just like that. So we're lucky to have revenue streams that can kind of keep things moving, but we rely on public support. Our annual effort is to raise $4 to $6 million with gifts. That's what's allowed us to improve the properties and maintain them well and add additional activities over time. But we also work really hard to put on a good program through the retail and the food service and the various museums and attractions. So last year, I should have asked you, Doug, for an annual membership because we had 999 members. We really wanted to have 1,000. And our annual membership program is $250 a year. And it's really important. It's very, very important to have a growing, stable base of people who are learning about Medora and learning what the Medora Foundation does to promote and to preserve and grow opportunities in the town.
Randy Hansenbuehler is the president of the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation. On future shows, we'll go behind the scenes and talk about the people who entertain and maintain Medora and discover one of its newest attractions. Natural North Dakota is next.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by AARP North Dakota, providing caregiving resources, healthy living information, tips for families to avoid scams, and connecting with communities at fun events. They're creating real possibilities here in North Dakota. AARP.org/ND. Prairie Public is proud to present the live storytelling event, The Moth, November 14th at the Fargo Theater. Tickets available now at Tickets 300 or online at jadepresents.com.
Chuck Lura is the author and the voice of the Natural North Dakota essays you hear on Main Street and at other times on our Prairie Public Network. He's a retired biology teacher who loves to share the wonders of our natural world. Today, he takes us below ground to talk about soil fungus.
We all learned at an early age that plants' roots serve to anchor the plant and absorb water and nutrients from the soil. It might surprise some of you, but the absorption part needs revising. Mycorrhizae are fungal associates of plant roots. A few decades ago, these fungi were not well understood. They'd been documented in a few plants, mostly trees, and were considered to be rather unusual. But as scientists studied the fungi and associated plants more closely, it was discovered that some of these mycorrhizae grew around the roots while other species actually grew into the plant roots. The two forms of mycorrhizae are called ectomycorrhizae, ecto meaning outside, and endomycorrhizae, endo meaning within. We now know that the endomycorrhizae, those that grow into the plant roots, form symbiotic relationships with around 80% of all vascular plants. These plants occur in both wild and domestic plants, trees, shrubs, and herbaceous plants, and members of most plant families. They benefit the plant by basically trading water and essential nutrients, such as phosphorus, in exchange for sugars. They also are known to help protect the plant against disease and nematodes. More recently, scientists discovered that some of these endomycorrhizae in forested areas form networks in the soil that not only connect the roots of certain species of plants, but also to those of different species. So these mycorrhizae may be enabling the flow of water and nutrients between many, maybe most, of the trees in a forest. These relationships are a lot more complex than we had thought, and it's been suggested that perhaps 80% or more of the nitrogen and phosphorus in these plants may be obtained through the mycorrhizae. Mushrooms, of course, are the fruiting structures of fungi, and some of those mushrooms may be mycorrhizal species. So as you see all those mushrooms popping up in the woodlands, groves, and shelter belts and other places this summer, consider that they may be providing underground conduits for the movement of water and nutrients between trees and perhaps some other plants in the area. Roots may still be functioning in absorbing water and nutrients, but not all directly from the soil, but the mycorrhizae in the soil. I'm Chuck Lura.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center and Dakota College at Bottineau. You can read and hear today's story at prairiepublic.org.
Coming up on Main Street, Matt Olien reviews the new movie Yesterday. Sue Balcom joins us for Main Street Eats. And Ashley Thornburg and I will share our What's Happening calendar of things to do. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A member of the North Dakota Public Service Commission is raising some questions concerning a plea deal federal prosecutors reached with a grain trader from Leeds, who investigators allege was running his grain business like a Ponzi scheme. Under the deal, 22-year-old Hunter Hansen will plead guilty to federal charges of money laundering and wire fraud. He operated grain elevators in Tunbridge and Roarville and had a roving grain buyer's license. The deal said Hansen will forfeit his assets and will pay restitution of $11.4 million owed to creditors. The PSC, meanwhile, was appointed as bankruptcy trustee in state court, and Commissioner Randy Christman says he has some questions about what's described in that plea deal.
It's unknown to us how much the prosecutors are going to be able to capture. I hope it's a lot.
Christman says he thinks a lot of people have been led to believe that they're getting their money back.
Just me personally, I find it hard to imagine that he has that kind of money that can be captured, but has been sitting in jail all spring.
Christman says he has some doubt about how much will be paid back to producers. Meanwhile, he says the PSC's process continues.
Our team is working diligently on, they're making good progress, and It hopefully won't be too much longer, and we'll have a report into the courts.
Chrisman says the grain has been sold and the PSC is waiting for the proceeds. He says some money will also come from the grain indemnity fund. Chrisman says staff is now looking at the claims to see which ones are legitimate and which aren't. And severe weather could be developing over the next few hours and into the evening in the southwest, south central, and southeastern regions of North Dakota. Zachary Hargrove is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Bismarck. He says isolated storms should develop this afternoon, but later on this evening, activity should begin to pick up. Hargrove says he expects hail, strong winds with gusts up to 60 miles per hour, and heavy rain with these storms. He says there isn't a high risk for tornadoes tonight, but that anything is possible during severe weather. He says ahead of the holiday weekend, a lot of people may be engaged in outdoor activities, but it's important to stay vigilant in order to stay safe.
The day before the 4th of July, and maybe a lot of campers out there. So, the best piece of advice would be if you see the dark clouds, hear some thunder in the distance. Really, if you're close enough to hear the thunder, then you're close enough to be struck by lightning. So really, we kind of have our motto, when thunder roars, head indoors. So the best piece of advice would really be any kind of thunderstorm approaching, try to take cover any kind of indoor structure that you can find.
Hargrove says by the weekend, the threat of severe weather should die down. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
It's the summer movie season. It's time to talk about another new movie with Matt Olien, our resident film critic here at Prairie Public. And you're looking at a film titled Yesterday, which is a familiar title for a lot of us who are Beatles fans.
So if you've seen the trailer, Doug, this is the new film from director Danny Boyle, who, of course, Oscared for Slumdog Millionaire, very flamboyant type director. And the screenplay is by Richard Curtis. Now, Richard Curtis is known for writing the screenplays to Love Actually and Notting Hill. He really is good at sort of these British character drama comedies where you have a lot of characters involved and they always have interesting friends. And he's a very good writer. And, of course, in the trailer, as you see, Jack, played by Hamish Patel, is a struggling singer-songwriter, and he plays tents and festivals and little bars, and his manager is played by Lily James, who, of course, was in the film Little Woods, which won a lot of awards at the Fargo Film Festival last year. And she's his manager, and things just aren't going well. He's not achieving what he wants to. And as we know, the power goes out all over the world in a freak accident, and he is injured during that accident on a bike while he's riding because he can't see where he's going. All of a sudden, it's dark. And when he wakes up, he's given a guitar for surviving by his friends, and he plays Yesterday on the guitar. And his friends, as you've seen in the trailer, oh, that's a great song. When did you write that?
So nobody else knows about the Beatles.
Well, we don't think so. Paul McCartney wrote it, the Beatles, and they have no clue. And eventually he figures out that he is the only person he knows that's aware that they ever existed because he looks up Beatles on the internet and the bug comes up. And there's no evidence that this band ever existed. So guess what he does? He starts playing Let It Be and Long and Winding Road and Help and Day Tripper at gigs, and people love it and they think the songs are great. Next thing you know, he is off to the races. Kate McKinnon shows up as kind of the greedy manager of Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran does have a cameo in the film, and she's going to make him a superstar and everything like that. But the problem with the film, even though it's not bad, is that's the twist. The hook is right there, and I think it would have been better as a 30-minute film. The twist is, hey, the Beatles never existed. I'm going to play their songs. But where does the film go from there? Mm-hmm. And it really kind of bogs down. You kind of know what the ending is going to be before it comes. There's a couple little plot twists late in the film, especially an interesting character cameo that pops up that I wish would have been fleshed out a little bit better. And those are some interesting things that pop up. But it's a one-note film, Doug. That's all it is. And once we know what the twist is, It's kind of like when he gets successful and they're marketing him. That's not as interesting. It's not as interesting as the whole twist of him playing these songs. And his parents are like, oh, what's that new song? Leave It Be? No, Let It Be, Dad, it's called. Those are amusing scenes. But again, once the machine starts to make him famous because of these great songs, the film really bogs down. And the ending was predictable right from the beginning.
I'm assuming that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr don't make any cameos here.
No, there are no cameos. As I said, there is a character cameo later in the film, which I cannot talk about, that's sort of interesting, that sort of ties things together a little bit. I also want to say, too, what really comes through with this film, and again, if you're a Beatles fan, you probably want to go. If your kids are maybe interested in the Beatles, take them. That's fine. There's some nice performances, especially Kate McKinnon, as I said, as kind of the greedy, money-grubbing manager. She kind of steals the movie. She's just very caustic and, you know, says to him, we need to clean you up. You don't look terribly good. You don't look charismatic. I must say Himesh Patel isn't bad in the lead, but I think he isn't terribly charismatic as an actor either. I was a little underwhelmed by his performance. What comes through in the film, Doug, though, is the songs are still great.
All right.
If you strip away their charisma of the band, the timing they had, the songs were still great.
Okay. So this is if you're a Beatles fan, go-to movie, but yeah, it's a short subject as far as you're concerned.
Yes, as far as I'm concerned, okay, but not bad.
All right. It's time for our Oscar trivia question. In Oscar history, two films tied for the record of the most nominations without a single win. What are they?
The Color Purple in 1985. I believe it was 0 for 11, wasn't it, Doug?
Yes,
something
that's correct.
Like that. And The Turning Point in 1977, I think, was 0 for 10 or 0 for 11.
Wow.
Am I on the right track here?
Both received 11 Oscar nominations, and you are right. The Turning Point and The Color Purple blanked.
Tough nights.
11 Oscar nominations. That must have been heartbreaking for the cast and directors. All right. We've been to the movies with Matt Olien.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Hey, do you have a guest idea, a comment, or a question? It's easy to contact us. You can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or on Facebook, we're Main Street at Prairie Public. Or you can call us toll-free, 888-755-6377. We want to hear from you.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg in studio because in our Bismarck studio we have Sue Balcom. It's time to talk about food.
Hi, Sue. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, hi, guys. I'm glad to be here.
We have you in once a week for Main Street Eats. And this week, of course, not just a holiday, but an important time to know if there's going to be enough corn, right?
Well, now, it wasn't so much the corn that got me thinking, but as I was driving to town, are you familiar with the two-finger wave?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and nobody waves back at me anymore. And I'm thinking, what's the matter with these young people?
Are you still using the second finger? Because I'm giving them a one finger
wave. Using the right fingers. But I'm wondering if there are so many things that we grew up with that are unfamiliar to the kids of today, like this saying, knee high by the 4th of July. You guys are familiar.
I am familiar with that. And I think there are places around where our listeners are located in Minnesota and North Dakota where the corn is trying to get that high.
Yeah.
I was actually going to walk out into the field that we live next to just to check this out. But, you know, corn is not planted in rows like it used to be, like in old Alfred Hitchcock movies where you could run between the rows and hide from a plane that was spraying you.
And North that, by Northwest.
Yeah,
is the movie.
Very good. That dates me too, doesn't it? A little bit.
And
I
me.
Love old movies. But, you know, corn is becoming more prevalent in the state because our season is changing a little bit. So I just wondered if that old knee-high by the 4th of July still held true.
Well, I was in Costa Rica in December, and we came across a cornfield, and it was taller than my husband, who's 6'2". So whatever, yeah, taller than 6'2 by December 2.
So things
doesn't quite work, does it?
No. So things have been really changing there. One of the articles that I read said in about 1993, we started receiving more moisture.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why wheat isn't, You know, like wheat doesn't like it hot. The old Germans that came over to this country, they planted wheat because of the cold springs and the dry summers, and it grew quite nice. But they're finding that corn is more lucrative. So I had to do a little more research and find out that if you're familiar with the musical Oklahoma, there's a line in that movie that says, and this is probably more relevant to today, that corn should be high as an elephant's eye by the 4th of July. and that's from Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, in case somebody wants to go back and see
and that
wonderful musical. So,
well, that's just one of the sayings, of course, about the stuff that grows or where we grow it.
Well, right. And, you know, sometimes I say things that at my staff meetings at my real job that people are looking at me like, what are you talking about? Because they have no frame or point of reference like we did, such as, you know, making hay while the sun shines. I say that to my husband all the time, but he's the world's greatest procrastinator, and so he doesn't get that. But it actually says that in the Bible, that you make hay while the sun shines. That's smart. But if you go fishing during harvest, that's stupid.
Oh, I missed that part of the Bible, that second part. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's various translations that we use. So,
that's in the Sue Balcom translation?
Right. Yeah. Something called MSG, which is also something you find in your kitchen, I suppose. But you know, when you think about it, the way we grew up, and, you know, my dad had these idioms that I couldn't even repeat on the radio. They would have to be censored. But you would hear these things all the time when adults were talking, like, you know, happy as a pig in mud. Now, would anybody know what that meant? Or how about chicken with a head cut off? That's somebody, you know, that's something that people used to describe me sometimes when I'm, like, puttering around, like a chicken with my head cut off. But if you've never experienced that, you wouldn't really know what that
meant. You don't know
they
run around for a little bit, and you would just assume that they fall over dead.
But they
can actually run around a little.
For a long time. And it's so much fun to watch people being chased by them. It's kind of like a miniature zombie apocalypse. So, but, you know, there's weather things like red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. Red sky at night, sailors delight. And this morning I happened to get up and it was really beautiful red and purple. And that means that there's a front coming our direction.
Yeah, well, the stuff when it builds in the east and comes your way, that's typically bad weather.
Totally. And it was, well, I guess the sun comes up in the east. That comes from the east. Yeah, that adds up in my mind. But do you know what a dust devil is?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. I love when I'm driving around North Dakota and see a dust devil. And you don't see them very often anymore. But they say that if the dust devil blows away from the sun, we're in for dry weather. If it blows towards the sun, there's rain on the way. And once again, wouldn't that have something to do with the direction of the wind? But then if you're driving the other direction. Well, anyway, it was a lot of fun to go back and kind of look at things like a dry March, a wet April, and a cool May will fill the barn and cellar and bring much hay. So that's what the farmers were.
I have not heard that one.
Looking for, you know, a little folkloric weather advice.
Well, of course, when we're doing interviews on Prairie Public, on Main Street, for example, we want to get real information, so we want to separate the wheat from the chaff.
There you go. That's another really good one. And sometimes when you're working or you're telling your kids to wait on something, you tell them to wait until the cows come home. And, you know, and where I come from, that one was, you know, like I said before, everything rotated around those dairy cows.
Yeah. Well, why do we say that one?
I think that cows actually know when to come into the barn to be milked. And so if you ever see a string of them moving in one direction in the evening, they kind of have like this built-in radar thing where they actually do come home. And it doesn't hurt to have a nice cattle dog out there either. So.
Right, nipping at the heels a little.
But here's my favorite of the day, and that would be, what does it mean to be put out to pasture?
Well, I'm not anxious to find out.
I know, right? You know, when you're young and you hear older people talk and you're like, I'm never going to be that way when I get mm-hmm. old. But you know what? You get to be a certain age and you're looking back and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of like my mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought we'd have a little fun with all those knee-high by the 4th of July kind of quotes. But then on a side note, it is spring and the 4th of July is this week and we should be out having barbecues. And I just wanted to throw in this little rhubarb tea recipe, which if you're having company and you happen to have rhubarb growing behind your house and there's no saying that goes with rhubarb picking, you just go out and get it. And if you take your rhubarb and you simmer it with about 8 cups of water, take about 8 big stalks of rhubarb and then strain that out and add a little sugar and maybe a fresh mint spray and sit down and contemplate, waving to me the next time you pass me on the road with the 2 fingers off the steering wheel.
There's also the nod.
The right, nod, right. Yep. Back when we used to do crop tours, people would be waving all the time at each other.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me about these phrases and how they still linger on long after anyone uses them on a day-to-day basis. Like, we still say rewind. And when was the last time anybody rewound anything?
Oh.
Or we record, you know, we tape something. But this is all digital. It has been for a long time. But this really speaks to how much we are disconnected from the land.
Absolutely.
And from living very close to our food sources. And how important that legacy still is, though, that we do still say things like this, even though I've never literally seen a pig happy in the mud or a cow.
Oh, but
come
they
home.
Love being in the mud.
It's nice and cool.
And yes, and it's because they don't have the ability to sweat. And that's why they like it in the mud like that. So even though my mom was deathly afraid of pigs, you know, because they do bite you or chew you up or whatever.
Right.
If you fall in the pig pen, you're free game, you know.
Yes, we will conclude this discussion with Ritzeller Sue.
Right, so, and don't put me out to pasture yet, okay?
It's always a pleasure, Sue.
Thanks, guys.
What's happening is next.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the North Dakota Farmers Market and Growers Association, helping North Dakota farmers, ranchers, and gardeners market their products through farmers markets, grocery stores, and restaurants statewide. Learn more at ndfarmersmarkets.org.
Well, it's the biggest summer weekend of the summer, so I guess we know what's going on. Lots of fireworks, lots of picnics, lots of family reunions, lots of get-togethers. So Ashley Thornburg and I are looking at our calendar of things that are happening, and one thing is very obvious, and we'll get to that.
Right. We will get to a bunch of different fireworks shows and parades, but we also want to mention other events like the International Peace Garden Triathlon. This is this weekend in Dunseith, again at the International Peace Garden. So a triathlon, you're going to be swimming and running and biking. This is the first ever triathlon at the Peace Garden. And this is from 8 to 3. It gets going on Saturday the 6th. It is actually free to participate in. And then, of course, if you are not feeling like biking, swimming, and running, you can clap. Go out and cheer on these athletes this weekend in Dunseith.
Music in the Park. That's Friday through Sunday in New England at City Park and Memorial Hall. Weekend Music Festival includes various artists from around the state. Burgers in the Park will also be available if you're hungry. The acts will include Colleen Reinhart, Debbie Rogers, Chuck Suki, Josh Kerr, Joe Wiegand as Teddy Roosevelt, Ed Prowse, the Queen City Polka Band, Clyde Bauman, and Milo Hatzenbuehler, the Ballard Sisters, and then they'll have special guest Mary Louise Defender Wilson. The Performances vary by day. Again, it runs from Friday through Sunday in New England at the City Park and Memorial Hall. The cost, though, boy, it's a gift. It's free.
We'll all be looking up in the air for fireworks, but during the day, you can check out the Dakota Territory Spirit of the Plains Air Show. This is tomorrow, the 4th of July, in Minot at the Minot International Airport. This is co-hosting the Spirit of the Plains alongside the Canadian Forces Snowbirds. We'll be World War II aircraft demonstration, adrenaline pumping first class aerobatics. There's going to be some drone demonstration. Bring the whole family out to this event, 4 o'clock on the 4th at the Minot International Airport, and it's free.
Here's a clever idea. Nerd Dependence Day. It's Saturday in Fargo at Paradox Comics and Games. Inside every one of us, there's a nerd. This summer, you can celebrate Nerd Dependence Day weekend. Wake your inner nerd and, most of all, your right to be whoever you want to be. It runs from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday, again at Paradox Comics and Games. It's free to go in and become a nerd or be a nerd.
Fort Abraham Lincoln State Park this Saturday is having a 30-year rededication. So this is a 30-year effort to rebuild the Custer House, and you can take a look at this local piece of history. Again, this is at the Fort Abraham Lincoln State Park this Saturday. Gets going at 1 o'clock.
This is a regular event. The Whoever Can Come Band will be hosting a free and open to all post-Independence Day jam session at the Barnes County Museum from 1 to 4 on Saturday. That's the 6th of July. Wear your red, white, and blue. Bring your instrument and come play along. Again, in Valley City at the Barnes County Museum from 1 to 4 on Saturday. Now, we got some stuff going on for the big day.
Oh, yeah. Thursday, the 4th in Jamestown, the annual Kitty Bike Parade. Drawings for boys and girls bikes and helmets, cash prizes to the most decorated bikes. Line up at 9:30, parade at 10, and it's free.
The 4th of July Symphony Spectacular is on the 4th of July in Bismarck on the North Dakota State Capitol grounds. Former Burning Hills singer Brandon Box Higdern and Medora's Queen of the West, Emily Walter, join the Bismarck Mandan Symphony Orchestra for an evening of pops, country, and patriotic favorites with the annual Fireworks Spectacular. It starts at 8. It's free.
The Sertoma 4th of July Festival and Fireworks Show is in Grand Forks at the Softball Complex. So there's a kitty parade, games, prizes, giveaways, food, live entertainment. Of course, fireworks after dark. It's going 11 a.m. and goes until 11-ish p.m. And it's free in Grand Forks at the Softball Complex.
Well, they got that big thing going in Bismarck. There's an even bigger thing going in Mandan. They have their big parade. It's a very big parade. It's on Main Street. Thousands of spectators will line the streets of Mandan to celebrate Independence Day with the region's largest parade. The 2019 parade, themed The Sweet Music of Freedom, will feature the pageantry and tradition of high-stepping equestrians, spirited marching bands and service organizations, and many other attractions. The big parade starts at 8 in the morning, and it's free. Again, it's on Main Street in Mandan.
Big celebration at Bonanzaville in West Fargo gets going at 10 a.m. with horse-drawn wagon rides, crafts, face painting, bouncy houses, fireworks after dark. Tickets are $12. And of course, pretty much any town near you at dark is going to have some fireworks.
Probably your neighborhood, too.
Yep, stay safe.
Enjoy the 4th of July.
A box jellyfish is an ocean swimmer's worst nightmare.
Most swimmers who have ever been touched by them and lived to tell the tale have said, never, ever am I going back in those waters.
Diana Nyad tells us about her remarkable swim from Cuba to Florida. And we visit important women's history sites around America.
And Harriet Tubman now has achieved new fame and notoriety.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 3rd. Mosquitoes are pesky, pestiferous, and pestilential, besides being prolific. One of the most plentiful mosquito species in North Dakota has a scientific name of Aedes vexans. Aedes meaning unpleasant or odious, and vexans meaning vexing. You get the picture. Both elements of its name mean extremely nasty. Because mosquitoes have been forever troublesome, Paul Bunyan-esque tales of the insidious insect have arisen like odoriferous vapors from stagnant waters. Here are a few of those legends. In Bismarck, the summertime population was calculated at 7,287,691,476, with 99% being mosquitoes. Wells County was said to have produced 400,000 mosquitoes for every square inch of territory. An Eastern newspaper wrote that millions of mosquitoes swarmed out of every pool of water in North Dakota and were so hefty they would fly into your face with a heavy thud and stay there till you killed them. At Northwood, a pioneer recalled that mosquitoes were larger in the earlier years than later. They were so big that he could hear them crawling on the top of the shanty of his homestead. A Missouri River mosquito was said to be a formidable animal, fluctuating in size between the bald eagle and the snowy owl. These legendary massive insects could swoop down into the river and pull out catfish. A fisherman said the Missouri Riverbank mosquitoes were much more numerous and larger than the fish in the river. A visitor from Fargo noted that North Dakota mosquitoes are said to weigh 10 pounds at birth, and whenever anyone ventured outdoors, they would attack. It was on this date in 1891 that Dr. D. R. Streeter, editor of the Emmons County Record in Linton, wrote about a terrific fight between a mosquito and a flickertail gopher, in which the desperate gopher bit the mosquito and broke one of its legs, but the gigantic mosquito finally speared the gopher on its stinger and flew away with the dead carcass. Editor Streeter complained that Linton's voracious mosquitoes attacked hens' eggs and sucked the yolks clean out of the eggshells. These skeeters were so enormous they would attack hen houses and carry off young chickens to their swamp lairs. All in all, these legendary tales added a new dimension to North Dakota culture. There was not just four seasons within a year, but also mosquito season. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Steve Hoffbeck. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
On the next morning edition, President Trump has a grand plan for the 4th of July celebration in Washington, D.C.
It'll be like no other. It'll be special, and I hope a lot of people come.
Why his big changes are causing concern. And get ready to binge watch a new season of Stranger Things.
And as bad as the superpowers were in season 2, the boyfriend is 10 times worse in season 3.
On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thursday, Main Street is preempted for a special presentation from the Capitol Steps, the satirical music troupe that puts the mock in democracy. You can share a beer with Pete Buttigieg, Brett Kavanaugh, and Vladimir Putin as they poke fun at the latest news. We hope you have a great 4th of July and enjoy the rest of your day.